Welcome, it's SB Pod. I'm Scott Van Pelt with Stanford Steve. I say with him, he was with me, and I was going to incorporate him in the tease, but he clicked off the Zoom before I could even ask him how fired up he was about the draft. The big fella is excited. So am I. It's next Thursday. It's intriguing. We've got all the quarterback drama. We have all the pass catchers. Budget is a lot of fantasy football flavor, and there's also a lot of players who have performed for teams that you know, high-level, high-profile college football teams. So it's the type of draft where I think you're going to have at least a passing idea of who these people are. And I say you and me and Steve, but not to the depth of a guy like Todd McShay, who will join us here momentarily to talk about the draft. And here's what you need to know about McShay. The dude's got his own podcast he's doing with Field Yates and Mel. And he's just done a SportsCenter special. So the last thing in the world, he wants to do is talk to us two idiots about the draft. But because he's a mensch, and he's one of us, and he's a good guy, he made some time for your boys. Also, be sure to check out the First Draft podcast with Todd McShay, Mel Kiper Jr., and Field Yates. The draft is next week. They've got you covered with everything you need to know.
And action.
Join now on SV Pod by Todd McShay, NFL Draft next week. The man is literally just off a set. I thank you. And here's the thing. In life, right, you're a famous guy. Steve's a famous guy. I'm not so much. But we've all had that moment where somebody comes up to us and they do that thing and they say, hey, I don't want to bother you. And I always say two things. Number one, you're not bothering me. Number two, if you hated to do it, you wouldn't do it.
Exactly.
And so when I send McShay a text to say, bro, I hate asking you as much as you hate being asked, but can we just do some rapid fire draft stuff? Because this draft is legitimately fascinating. And you know, Steve and I, we watch the stuff. So thank you. Sincerely, thank you.
I appreciate it. I love you guys. You know that. Let's do it.
Okay. I'll just dive right in with this. We know it's going to be quarterback heavy. I want to know if you think that 2011 was the year that everything changed. And that was the year where Cam went one. We knew that would happen. But then Locker went 8, Gabbert went 10, Ponder went 12. And we were all looking around going, what is this? Like, was that like the year that from the NFL's perspective, you're just going to take flyers on dudes, whether they're going to pan out or not, or if I'm wrong with that kind of that theory?
No, that was the year the collective bargaining agreement changed. And so it went from $50 million the year before to $25 million. And so teams were starting to say, you know what? We can mess up at quarterback and still, like, we can recover 3-4 years down the road versus 7-9 years down the road. That legitimately was the difference.
Okay. Now history tells us that, okay, if five guys go first round, like it's
40%.
Right. And that's generous, Todd. That's pretty generous. 40%. So history says you're going to swing and miss. If there's anything about this group collectively that you would say, all right, hold on, maybe not. Maybe this group's different. What is it about the collective, if you believe that, that might make this different?
Well, Trevor Lawrence is a once-in-a-decade type of quarterback prospect, right? I mean, he's so calm. He handled everything. He's 38-2 as a starter at Clemson. And so we know what he is. But their team, you know, talking to the head coaches and the general managers that have been evaluating him in the top two spots, the biggest thing is he doesn't have the recall. And I'll only tell you this. He doesn't have the recall that an Andrew Luck has. But from the physical tools, he has everything that you want. And so teams are kind of, you know, managing and working it, but Trevor Lawrence is going to be the number one overall pick. Then Zach Wilson from BYU is going to be the number two pick. After that, it is, in my opinion, a little bit of a crapshoot because you've got Mac Jones from Alabama who only started 17 games. He had the two pick sixes against Auburn the prior year in 2019. And then he got better and better as this past year went on. And everyone's saying that Kyle Shanahan from San Francisco wants him to be, you know, the pick at number three. But I look at it and say, man, I would love to have Trey Lance from North Dakota State. He just brings more mobility, and we'll see how that plays out. And then after that, you've got Justin Fields, who's probably the most physically gifted quarterback in this entire class. So it's really interesting. And we all know that every single year, it's about 40% in terms of where the quarterbacks wind up and do they have success in the NFL. And, you know, we just have to wait and see. But I think that Mac Jones is probably going to be the third overall pick, even though he's the fifth most talented quarterback in terms of just physical skills of this group.
Todd, so if he doesn't have the recall as Luck, then he can't have the same grade as Luck. So he better not get the same final grade. I'm just telling you. All right? That's what we got left to hang on.
I got you, Steve.
I want to go back to the quarterbacks, okay? I started thinking about this last year with Tua and Burrow, and especially when they played each other. And I looked at them, and you go back and you watch the film. They have the advantage of every single matchup on the field. Their guy is better than the guy that's trying to guard them at every single position. And Burrow made the most of it. And he's continued to, you know, he went all the way up to number one. And I think the same thing about the top four guys at the biggest programs this year. And I'll get to Lance after this, but Trevor Fields, Wilson, and who am I missing?
Jones.
How do you evaluate and how do you find they've taken advantage of the system. It feels like, how do you evaluate and decipher when there's just so much good and they have so many advantages? Like, is there enough, is there enough dirty film out there? You know, like, it's just, you know, they just had, to credit to them, they've taken advantage of it. But like, how do you go about the process of that evaluation knowing they have the advantage every snap?
I think it's very easy when you evaluate Trevor Lawrence. He's clearly the most talented quarterback, and then it's Zach Wilson after that. But then Mac Jones is the hardest one of all these guys, because Trey Lance has the mobility. Justin Fields has the mobility. They both can extend plays. Trey Lance played 17 games at the FCS level, right? So it makes it so hard to evaluate what he did. And he had the one game against Central Arkansas this past year, which was a showcase game and one of the weirdest college football games that I've ever watched.
Yeah.
But when you watch Mac Jones, yes, he only had 17 starts as well. And yes, he had talent around him, but he put up better numbers than Tua Tagovailoa put up with four wide receivers that are going to wind up being first round draft picks. And so Mac, and talking to Steve Sarkisian, the former offensive coordinator, who now is the head coach at Texas, in the first game of the year, he said, all we need from Mac is for him to be, you know, just stay in his lane. Don't do anything outside of what you need to do. We've got wide receivers. We've got offensive linemen. We've got Najee Harris. They're all going to be first-round picks. And then the third game that we did after the second and then the third game we did, he said, I've never installed more with a college quarterback than I have with this quarterback. So it tells you how mentally ready he is to be a star in the NFL. But the problem is he doesn't have the physical tools that you see from Trey Lance and Justin Fields. So that's what makes it so difficult when you're trying to evaluate these quarterbacks.
You said with that, you say Lance 3 to the Niners. That's what you think you would do. Have you seen
that's what him I would do? Yes.
You've seen him face enough adversity to make you feel comfortable?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
I haven't. But I've also watched Kyle Shanahan watch Matt Ryan get out of field goal position because he didn't have the mobility. I've watched Kyle Shanahan watch Kansas City and Patrick Mahomes in the second half when he was extending plays. And something tells me that I know that he wants that joystick. He wants the smart guy. He wants someone who can pick up things really quickly. But don't you want someone who can bring more to the table in terms of mobility and extending plays and creating beyond the initial play? That's what I'm struggling with, because I see that in Trey Lance. I see that in Justin Fields. I don't see that in Mac Jones, even though I watch Mac Jones in his QBR versus pressure, his QBR versus the blitz, his QBR in 21 plus yards down the field in terms of throws are better than everyone else in this class, including Trevor Lawrence and including Zach Wilson. Like, he has everything that Kyle Shanahan wants. But don't you want to see some more mobility in that system? That to me, okay, is the most interesting part of this draft.
Have you reached the part that is inevitable before every draft where you just want to puke if you have to put on, like, more tape of a certain prospect? Like, I mean, I guess in the case of, like, a Wilson, you don't need to watch anymore. Like, you assume, like, okay, he's two, the draft starts at three. But, like, have you reached the point where it's like, I just can't anymore with this? Or is this class such that, you know what, there's so much that's interesting about it?
Take a look behind me. This is where I watch all my tape.
Okay.
390 players I've watched. 390 since last May to now. And I've seen enough. I gotta mail it in, right?
Who do you love? Who do you absolutely love? A guy that Todd McShay saying, like, and we feel like through the years, this goes back to the Russillo days, like, McShay would put his rep on the line and say, this guy right here is going to be a badass pro.
I'm going to go with Elijah Vera Tucker, the left tackle from USC, who's going to kick inside the guard, and he's going to be a star. And I love Rashawn Slater from Northwestern, another left tackle. And everyone's talking about Penei Sewell, right? And he's going to be a great player as well. He's 330 pounds. He's physical. He's tough. He's long. It takes a lot to get around him. But I love mobile offensive linemen. And I think Vera Tucker as a guard is going to be a great player. And I think Rashawn Slater is going to be a great left tackle because he's so mobile. And in today's NFL, right, screen game, quick game, second level blocking, and those two guys are so exceptional in that area. I love watching them. And then Kyle Pitts, I think if you throw all the quarterbacks out of this draft, Kyle Pitts is the best player in this draft. He really is. I mean, his wingspan is, we've never seen that. We've never seen the length that a tight end has had. His ability to get off the press and listen, if anyone knows, Steve, you're my tight end guy.
Yeah.
He can separate. He can run after the catch. He can pluck on the run and transition up the field quickly. I have never given a tight end a higher grade than I've given to Kyle Pitts.
I just think that the hype is getting out of control, Todd. Like, this, the expectation is getting crazy. And
tell me who else then in this draft is better than him and can be a matchup piece that he is.
Oh, no, not at the position. No chance. There's nothing. I'm just saying the expectation level for what he's going to produce. You know, when you start talking to, you know, fantasy football numbers, like, people are just saying astronomical things. And I just feel like he's going to get different coverages he hasn't seen. He's going to face way better athletes than he's seen. And if, no offense to the SEC, I know you guys are awesome, but it just feels like the hype is so out of control. And I just worry about the kid being able to fulfill these expectations that are being put on a position that I've never heard. Like, the tight end's the Y position. He might have to transform it and find his own letter. Because the way people are talking about him, where he's going to be like, he's the P or something.
I hear you, man. But, like,
yeah,
who's better in this class? You know what I mean? Like, I look at the wide receivers, and I love Jamar Chase from LSU. Mm-hmm. He's a great player. I know he opted out this past year, but he's the most talented wide receiver. Devontae Smith had probably the best receiving year in the history of college football. And we're talking about him as probably the second receiver off the board. And Jaylen Waddle, don't forget this. He had, in the first four games when he was healthy, he had 13 fewer catches and 74 more yards than Devontae Smith. So you're talking about three exceptional pass catchers. But I to me, if I'm an offensive coordinator, and if I'm Atlanta, and I'm sitting there at number four, and if we decided, you know what, we're gonna go with Matt Ryan for the next couple of years, I'm gonna take Kyle Pitts because I can match him up with Julio Jones, and Calvin Ridley. And all of a sudden now we have a chance to go from picking fourth overall to maybe being in the playoffs and making a run.
That's exactly what I said last week about that exact thing. Because if Julio and Ridley are on the field, Julio's wide, Calvin's in the slot or wide, yeah, and now Pitts has a linebacker on him.
Well, how are you going to cover me?
You're not. It's play the fight song. To put it in college terms, you're playing the fight song again. If that's what you choose to do. Now, when you did all your mocks, you added a lot of layers of moving parts and some trades, and Steve and I had this conversation the other night as we were doing the Sports Center, like during a break, about no, I don't believe anything anyone tells me now. Okay. Like
no, nothing.
There's no point in ever having anybody from a front office on, because why would they tell me? Well, you know, Scott, we're really thinking we're going to trade. Well, they're not going to be honest about that, but you get the feel for who might move up, who might move back. Now I'm hearing Charlotte might be willing to move, Carolina rather, might be willing to move back. Here in Washington, I wonder, might they try to move up to get Lance? Like, if there's a team that you buy would be ready to push chips in the middle and move up, is there one that stands out?
I think New England's the most interesting team, honestly, okay, because Bill Belichick always adapts, right? Mm-hmm. And every time I think I know what he's going to do, and every time I go off the history of what he's done, I always have to adjust because he does something different. And now you're sitting at 15, and they backed up the Brinks truck, right, for the two tight ends and the receivers and the edge rushers and everyone else that they spent the money on. Why wouldn't you go up and get a quarterback? But you know you have to get up ahead of Denver. That's the whole thing. Because there's a very, very good likelihood that the first three picks are going to be quarterbacks. Atlanta could take the fourth quarterback. And so, you know, Denver's sitting there at number nine. So they have to make a deal with, as you mentioned, Carolina or Detroit to go up and get that quarterback. So it's going to be fascinating to see. Obviously Chicago wants to move up and get a quarterback, but I, from 20 to 7 or 8, I just don't see that. So no, I think New England's the most likely team to move up into that top 10 to go get a quarterback.
Chicago doesn't need to move up. They got QB1, bro. QB1.
Yeah, they do. Dalton. They do.
Red Rifle. Respect.
Andy Dalton, baby.
Put some respect on that name.
Scott, or Todd, is it the Micah Parsons deal? We're hearing stuff here. Is he the best defensive football player in this class?
I think so. I really do. I've stood next to him. And you know how important length is, right, on these mm-hmm. defensive guys? I think his arm was below his knees when I was standing next to him at the Penn State game. Like, he can cover. He goes sideline to sideline. He's crazy, which is exactly what you need at the linebacker position. And I mean that in the nicest possible way. Like, he's got a screw loose. And he just – he loves physicality and tackling dudes and taking guys down. And the thing that Micah Parsons does better than any off-the-ball linebacker that I've watched in the last few years, he gets after the quarterback. Mm. He can get home. And there's not many guys like that. Listen, I love Patrick Surtain, the corner from Alabama, and Caleb Farley, who's coming off the back injury from Virginia Tech. I think he's the best man-to-man cover corner. And, you know, there's so many other great players on the defensive side that are going to get pushed down. But I think Micah Parsons is the best defensive player in this draft.
Would his stock be higher if he played this year?
It might be. But I also think, like, when you have five quarterbacks that we're talking about in the top 10 to 15, and then you have four pass catchers with mm-hmm. Kyle Pitts, Devontae Smith, Ja'Marr Chase, and Jaylen Waddle, those are nine guys right there. So – all these defensive players are going to get knocked down. Patrick Surtain's going to get knocked down. J.C. Horn, the corner from South Carolina, is going to get knocked down. All of these other defensive players will get knocked down in that, like, the 11 to 20 range. But I don't think that playing this year would have helped Micah Parsons. He's a special talent. I think he's going to be the first defensive player off the board. And if he's not, he's probably going to be the best defensive player in this year's draft.
Todd, how light is it this year on defensive tackles in particular, and then edge rushers in general? Just D line sort of get after the passer type talent. Is it how thin is it?
the defensive end position, the edge guys, it's pretty good. And everyone's kind of missing that. Like Kwity Paye from Michigan is so twitchy and explosive. Jalen Phillips from Miami is powerful. And he had a great season this past year. His teammate who opted out, Greg Rousseau,
had a
great season 2 years ago, 15 and a half sacks. You got Azeez Ojulari from Georgia is a perfect 3-4 outside linebacker who's got the speed, the explosiveness, that dip and rip move that he has is special. So, and Zaven Collins from Tulsa. I mean, there's so many good edge players.
But
defensive tackle position is brutal. I mean, Christian Barmore is the only guy coming out of Alabama that I would give a first-round grade to. After that, Levi Onwuzurike is probably the next best coming out of Washington, but he's a three technique that you take in the second round. But I think there's a good chance that we go through the entire first round, Scott, without a defensive tackle coming off the board.
But the edge guys, the edge guys are interesting. And I don't know if I say his name right. Is it Owe or Owa, the guy from Penn State
who ran a 4.38, right?
Yeah, he was an absolute freak in their pro day up in Happy Valley. Like the edge guys, and I sent this by way of a text to you that I just had this thought earlier. It feels like they're not the quarterbacks of the defensive side, but it feels like it's a coin flip there in terms of assessing the guys that are going to translate, right? Like the guys whose college skills. And I guess I just don't understand why is it so hard to figure out who's going to be able to do it, man. Like you spend your whole life trying to figure it out, and it feels like they just it's just wild to me. You know what I'm saying?
What's hard is when you study tape on these guys, they're going up against offensive linemen that they're not going to face in the NFL.
That's fair.
For the most part.
Yeah.
That's what's hard. So you're watching, you're watching Zaven Collins play in subpar level. You're watching a lot of these guys that are not going up against elite offensive tackles. But I will agree with you on this. No question about it. Outside of quarterback, I need a guy that's going to get to the quarterback. And these defensive ends, I'd love to have defensive tackles. We don't have them this year.
Yeah.
But the defensive ends are the next best thing. And then corners and now wide receivers because of how the game is – evolved in terms of being so spread out, but I, you know, the edge rushers to me right now in this year's class are the second most important position, and then I would go wide receiver third.
All right, before he face plants, Steve, rapid fire.
Yep. All right, here we go. Over over unders. Here we go. Ready?
Oh no, here we go.
Come on, rapid fire.
Yep.
Sewell over under 5.5.
Over. I don't think Cincinnati's going to take him.
Wow. Okay. Jamar Chase over under 5.5.
Ooh. And when I say over, you mean going higher, right?
Yes.
I'm going to go over.
Okay.
I think if Cincy doesn't take Penei Sewell at 5, I think that I think they go tight end at that spot. Yeah.
All right. Well, there it is. Pitt's over under is 5.5 too. Yeah.
Kyle Pitts goes 5.
Okay. Under. Trey Lance over under 6.5.
Ooh. Under. Under. Ooh. I still think San Fran's going to wind up taking him. At 3.
Okay. All right. Sertan over under 10.5.
You're a jerk. I'm going to go under. I think he goes to Dallas at 10 if Dallas doesn't move up or back.
Parsons 11.5.
I'm going to go over. I think all the defensive players are going to start to fall a little bit, but I think he deserves to go somewhere in the top 10.
All right. Last two, the two Alabama receivers, Waddle 11.5.
Under.
Really? Under.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's going top 10.
Yes. I believe I've talked to two different teams that actually have him ahead of Devontae Smith on their board.
So you would say over on Devontae Smith, 11.5.
What's the number?
11.5. Same number.
I think they both go in the top 10.
Woohoo!
Yep.
All right. We got that.
Five
the Waddle return game's got to be a big factor, right?
Four pass catchers go in the top 10.
the Waddle return game has to be a big factor, right? Or yes, both of them, actually, because Devontae did pretty well.
Man, like, this league wants guys that you can just put in space and go do different things. He's not Tyreek Hill. There's only one Tyreek.
Yeah.
But he's pretty darn close.
All right.
How many punters go first day?
We got the suits all ready to go?
Yeah, that's it. That's it. That's it. Wait,
I miss you two idiots.
Let's leave them with a laugh. You're gracious to spend time. I mean it sincerely. I know how much of a pain in the ass it is. You continue to do great work, and we love to see it, man. Stay well, and we'll watch you shine on draft night. All right, pal?
I appreciate you guys.
Steve and I have lengthy lists. Talk about this guy or this thing or this whatever. Once a week, one thing a week.
Here's what I hate.
All right, Silky Johnson sponsored. Hate. I hate you, I hate you, and I hate you. I hope every bad thing in the world happens to you and only you. Here's what I hate this week. Steve, I'm going first.
Go.
I hate the fact that, hold on a second, December, January, February, March, April, more than 4 months after testing positive for the Rona, I hate the fact that I still can't taste. Food doesn't taste right. Nothing tastes right. I can taste certain things. Other things don't, no flavor at all. Things that taste, that should taste like something. Like, I like a nice Planters peanut. It's a good source of something crunchy, kind of salty, good protein. You eat a handful of peanuts. If I put a handful of peanuts in my mouth that has this strangest sort of odd flavor, one of many things that don't taste right, and I hate it, and I'm sick of it. I'm going to get a shot this week.
Mm-hmm.
Team Pfizer, supposedly that has helped for some fellow long haulers, hashtag survivors, that have gotten the Rona like I had. And I'm grateful that what I got was just this kind of BS, can't taste, but you're fine for the rest, that is way more important. But like, it's 4 months and change down the line, and I can't taste many things. Thankfully, Diet Coke I can kind of taste. That's good.
Yeah.
Peanut M&Ms, oddly enough. Peanuts on their own don't taste right, but add the M&M portion. And so you're thinking, oh, you're probably losing weight. No, I'm not, because you know what I do, Steve? I hate eat. I hate eat.
That's
I
just a segment.
I just eat because I'm mad, and I'm like, I can't taste it, but it, I'm eating it anyway. Shout out to Lido Pizza. It's a regional pizza that I like a lot. It has a very distinctive flavor. I can't taste it. Mm. Can't taste that tomato sauce. It's got a sweetness to it. Can't taste it. But when my family was away this week, you know what I did? I ate a whole damn pie in sorrow, just eating piece after piece, furious that I can't taste it. Like, the sausage has got a great sausage on a Lido pie. Can't taste that. Can't taste the tomato. And I eat it anyway, to the point that I think I'm going to puke because I've eaten so much, hoping that the light will come on, but it won't. It has to go. This has to end. I have to get my taste back. Damn it.
You ate a whole pizza sober?
It was over the period of several sittings.
Okay.
I mean, okay.
I thought you just sat down after a long drive, and you just sat down and got after it, rolled the sleeves up and went.
I did, because I like Lido's is not circular. It's a rectangle. No. They don't cut corners. I like the outside pieces. So I did all the corner.
So do I.
I did all the corner crusts.
And then middle's just staring at you.
Yep. And then I just smashed some of that. Otis got some pepperonis. He just sat there drooling.
Nice.
Like, it's just like a faucet of drool. And so, yeah, that's where we are. I hate that I can't taste. And I'm hoping that this vaccine, on top of theoretically keeping me from getting ill if this pops up again.
Okay.
I hope it turns the light bulb on and takes me to Flavortown. Shout out Guy Fieri. What do you hate, Steve?
This is big, Scott. I might hate you after this because this has to go through a couple questions. So,
okay. Well, I think we've come to a crossroads in our relationship.
You have a dog, correct?
I do.
Do you take the dog for a walk?
No, we did today. As a matter of fact, beautiful day here in the DMV.
Okay. Is there a sidewalk in your community?
There is.
Did you walk the dog on the sidewalk?
We did.
Thank God. Because people that walk their dogs on roads that have sidewalks on the road, in the road, I hate them. Why are you walking in the road when there's a sidewalk right there? What is your problem? Joggers, there's a sidewalk. Jog on the sidewalk. Why are you in the road? I can't stand it. And it's a serious problem down in your neck of the woods because of those cyclers.
Yeah, it's a pandemic.
They're a whole different argument. But if you have a dog and you're walking your dog in a neighborhood that has a sidewalk and you're walking the dog in the street, I hate you.
Those cyclists can get some too. Because those guys in the middle of the road and their Tour de France jerseys, like they're riding the Pyrenees. Get the fuck out of the road, man. Come on. What are we doing?
What are we doing? What are we doing?
What are we doing? And they look at you like you're the bad guy.
I can't drive my car on the sidewalk.
Exactly. Exactly.
Jesus.
It is
a problem.
It is.
Listen, I'm not talking about the dogs. I'm talking about the people that have the dogs. Because now you guys think you're all cool and you all have these stretch chains where you're like, oh, yeah, look at Lucy run. And then all of a sudden, it's like 30 feet.
And oh, Lucy's up there. Where's Lucy? Are you going to get a dog?
No.
Come on. There's no chance that the girls haven't asked you, Daddy, can we get a dog?
No, they know.
Okay.
Why do you hate dogs, Steve?
I don't hate dogs. I had a dog growing up all the time.
Get the girls a dog then.
Not getting a dog.
Okay. I think we can delve a little deeper into the cycling thing down the road. But right now, Steve hates the people.
Down the road.
There you go. Steve hates the people that walk their
dogs. Am I wrong?
No. No, there's a sidewalk, man. Come on.
Okay. Exactly.
What are we doing?
Thank you.
What are we doing? My thing is, no, I can't blame anyone. Like, I just every morning I wake up and pray that today's the day that I can taste. And
how's
I don't
that go. How's that going?
So far, you know, I've been told God
blew DiMaggio streak away.
God answers every prayer. Sometimes the answer is no. I'm glad you added streak after you said I blew DiMaggio, because that, you know. Very important.
Blue DiMaggio streak.
Streak, yeah. Important. Yeah, we're 4 months and counting here, and wow. I mean, I just really want to be able to taste Lito's pie and like Italian food. It's just,
yeah.
Because there's
what else you can't. The only thing you can taste is a peanut M&M. Come on.
I can certain like salt, like because you're like. The thing about Steve that you don't know that you would like to know is that if you eat with Steve, Steve is got to have his seasonings right. Mm-hmm. So he'll get packets of different things to make sure. And when we used to eat in the ESPN calf, like he'd get a dozen salt packets and make sure that the salt was on there. Like you'll eat some salt. Like if you were a cow, you would just be at the salt lick all day getting some salt.
Correct.
I can kind of taste the salt of certain things, but that like those Planters peanuts that have like the,
how about those popcorner chips I got you last night?
Not really.
No popcorn. But, no,
not really. The key on the Planters is like this dust. I don't know what it is. It's like this secret spicy dust that's what makes them taste good, but I can't taste it. But the minute I put the peanuts in my mouth, it's this flavor that isn't the, it's, people have described it like, it tastes like a nickel. And I'm like, who eats change?
I have a question for you.
I don't know what a nickel tastes like, but it is kind of tinny, I guess. What do you got?
What if they told you you had, if you drank a gallon of milk every day for a week, you would get your taste back? Would you do it?
Like a mother.
How about, and you hate milk.
I haven't had a glass of milk since I was in high school. I would chug gallons of milk. Of course I would. Do you? I can't taste food. So of course I drink that milk. Come on. All right. All right.
Can you taste Chipotle?
No, not really. Not really. It's not really. Not really. Can't, again, it's
a little salt on a steak.
There's certain, if the steak is seasoned correctly, like if the certain marinade, you get a little hint of it. Like there's like.
You could smell.
Yes. That's the weird thing. If you take your finger and you make
but,
like a
but
little.
But you couldn't smell.
Not initially. But if you make it a tiny little pinhole and you look through it, mm-hmm. you can see whatever's in that. I'm doing it right now. Everybody that's listening to the podcast is doing it right now. They're making a little pinhole and they're going, yeah. And you're looking through that. And I'm telling you, that's kind of all I can get out of the flavor. Like whatever's in that little pinhole, that's it. I want to be able to expand the view a little. So.
Why don't you try some? You should try and see if you could taste some of Otis's Alpo.
Why would I eat dog food?
See if you could taste it.
I don't know what it's supposed to taste like.
You can smell it. You know what it's going to taste like.
A terrible idea. All right. We've reached a point in the podcast when Steve's giving me terrible ideas, and I'm not eating dog food. I hope everybody has a lovely day. Thank you for making SV Pod part of your life, and we'll talk to you soon.